Thank you so much for joining. We're very, very grateful to all of you to be with us throughout these different sessions. Today we're going to talk about an important topic, which is about self-care for a woman to learning how to take care of her body, mind, and soul. Like the last nine sessions, we have discussed about how much is riding on a woman, you know, how much of the world, how much of the future of the world, how much of the future of the family, future of the children, future of the community, future of health, future of mental health, physical health, spiritual health, and direction that a society takes. You know, there is so much that is riding on a woman. And it would be unfair for us to do a seminar, a series like that, where we just talk about all the things that are, you know, what a woman's role is and, you know, her impact and, you know, how she's a high impact spiritual change agent and how she's the, you know, responsible for the future of the children and so many things. And it would be very unfair for us to just put all that responsibility without helping women learn how to take care of themselves. You know, with a society that is fast moving away from, you know, community, from, you know, big families, where there were more people around you to take care of you and understand you and love you, and where we are more living remote, you know, away from our families. You know, some of us are from India, so we're living in the West, and some of us are from the West, but still we're not living close to people. And you know, it, and even if there are people around us, everyone is so busy. It's a symptom of Kali Yuga that we don't get to really depend on people. You know, we're not able to get the energy of people to help us in our spiritual lives, in our, you know, caring for ourselves, caring for others like that. So we thought that we want to give some emphasis on women and self-care. Now, there are a lot of books on how to take care of yourself, and there's lots and lots of websites dedicated to that. So we will be able to point, what we want to give you is certain guiding principles over here, like on a, in a spiritual way, how to take care of yourself in a spiritual way. So we are here to talk about those guiding principles, and then the how-tos. I think there are a lot of how-tos available all over the web that you can go to, and we will try to make this session interactive. So I request you to be connected to the computer, and we will need you to be writing some stuff on the chat window also. Or to those of you who are on the conference call, can respond like that through that. So, self-care for a woman, physical, mental, or rather emotional and spiritual. So, it's basically taking care of your body, mind, and soul. Okay, for some reason, this slide. Okay, now it goes. So before we go into how we take care of ourselves, it's important to, you know, just test the compassion meter that we have for ourselves. You know, how much compassion do we feel for, you know, all that we do as women, and the amount of, you know, the amount of workload that we have, and the amount of stress that we carry, and the amount of things that we do. You know, I don't know how many of us have ever sat down and written down this exercise for ourselves. So I thought, you know, we'll do a little bit of that first, and then from that place of compassion for yourself, you can care for yourself. So what are the different roles you play and tasks you perform? You know, can you like put down some things in the chat window? What are the different kind of things that you do every single day? Like you have these pictures of, you know, a working woman, and even at work, she has so many things going on, right? And then you have a, you know, then the woman, the working woman comes back home and she's wearing a suit, but she has to do her grocery, take care of her baby, and do things. And similarly, a woman who is just, who's at home, is also taking care of so much stuff. You know, like ever since we started getting raw milk, I find that I have to be really attentive to that milk also. Or I have to be really attentive to the water, really attentive to the cleaning, really attentive to all the things in the house, things that are getting spoiled or things that need to be consumed before they get spoiled. Or just there are so many variety of things in the house that we manage, so many varieties of, you know, schedules that we help people with. so many varieties of pressures that we take on for our husbands, for our children, and things like that. And we do that very lovingly, very willingly. I'm not saying that any of you are complaining. I know you respect your role, but it tends to get a little stressful. So does anyone have any response on what are the different things that you do in a day, right? And here we've tried to tabulate that, and if I have missed anything, then please use the chat window to let me know and let all of us know. So if a woman is a mother, the various roles, she's a mother, she's a homemaker, she's a professional, she's a wife, she takes care of social relationships like we discussed, and plus her own spirituality, the spirituality of the family. And there is so much to do. Just so much to do, right? So as a mother, she's teaching her children. She's responsible for the forming of healthy bodies and, you know, academic performance, extra academic. You know, they need to learn these skills. They need to know how to do this. They need to know teamwork. They need to know leadership. So many things, right? And then there is, you know, responsible for the spiritual growth of the child. Oh, my child is now driving and I'm responsible to help my child do that. Or when they're not driving, you know, you keep driving around your children everywhere. And I know that, like my sister-in-law in London, because I stayed very close, like when I stayed with her. And I mean, I have a lot of appreciation for all of you devotees, but I don't stay with you. But when I got a chance to stay with my sister-in-law, I developed a lot more appreciation for her and for all of you. So she's also a devotee. And what I saw is that she had to make sure that she completes all the chores of the house and the cooking for the evening before her kids come back home. And many times she has to pick up her kids from school and take them directly to some piano class or something, and then she has to pack some snack for them, just to pack change of clothes for them, because there they wear school uniform. And suppose they're going for swimming, then she has to have that gear in place and so many things. And then when she comes back home, then, you know, the kids are hungry, she has to feed them and then make sure they do their homework and so many things. And I'm sure you all do a lot of that, right? And then also making sure that the clothes are properly, making sure that you help them with habits, you know, teach them, you know, habits, teach them values, and deal with their tantrums. And as a homemaker, you're cooking, cleaning, guests, then you have grocery to manage, you manage everyone's schedule, laundry, and then laundry also has so much variety, especially with you know, whites and colors go separately. Within colors, okay, this needs a warm wash, this needs a cold wash, this needs a dry clean, this needs a this needs a that, this just needs to be wiped. You know, there's so much to do. And then there are different varieties of pots and pans you deal with, and then clean them in a different way, and then have different scrubs for different things, and then keep organizing every nook and corner of the house. Like we talked about cleanliness and organization. And then make different processes. Okay, you know, this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens. And you have to educate everyone in the house about those processes so that, you know, the systems can run efficiently. And then if you're a professional also, or if you have some, or if you are pursuing some volunteer work or a role outside of your home also, you know, you have to take care of your individual profile. You have to make sure you work with the team nicely. Then you have cross-team work. Then you have many meetings, many deadlines. You got to keep your job, worry about your promotion, and then career growth and trajectory, and then deal with the bachelors and deal with, you know, others who don't have so many responsibilities like you do, because they can just go on and on working, and, you know, you have stuff to do at home. You still have the mother homemaker roles that you are trying to honor. And then as a wife, you're an advisor, you're a support system, take care of their food, you take care of their relationships, social. We already talked about the social, the wife stuff, in just one whole session we did on that. And then the social stuff, we did another whole session on that, right? And then mother also, we did one whole session on that. And homemaker, we did like two sessions on that. So there's so much to talk about. And, you know, social, so many relationships, so many different levels of relationships. I remember like 2 years ago when I went to India, I was just so stressed out. Because I was over there and then I had to be cordial to all the people, all the neighbors, and then make sure that, you know, all my parents, you know, my relationships from the parents' side were happy. Then make sure that my relationship from my husband's side were happy. Then make sure that my relationships from My own college friend side, which I always neglected all these years, I think only last year I started meeting them again. They, meet them. And then there was a whole circle of temple relationships that I had, even in the Bombay temple. And it just became, a lot to do, a lot to deal with. And then we have all of that going on even here. And then make sure that you have the right gift exchanges with them. Make sure you're pleasant. Make sure you dress up nicely. And, there's so many things. And then spiritual. You want to take care of your own spiritual needs and your family's spiritual needs. So you want to hear lectures every day. You want to attend the various weekly classes that are going on. I know some couples attend like 2 or 3 weekly classes every week in the temple. And then you have your own mantra meditation commitments. Then you also have your desires to serve devotees or serve like-minded people or meet like-minded people so that, you can advance together. You want to read scripture. You want to have some time for introspection. I don't think a lot of us get time for that. And then you want to associate with like-minded people. And then they have so many different services. And then you have your own interests to take care of, right? There are some things you like to do, you want to do, like your own hobbies or your own growth as a person. And all of that, right? And I really want you to develop some appreciation for your own self that, hey, there's a lot that I do. And, we want to make this group of women who appreciate each other and appreciate, our pressures and our roles so that we can support each other. And if I've missed anything, please let me know, so I can include that. I try to be very comprehensive. But I'm sure there is stuff. There is a lot more stuff than this. This is just some generic stuff that I have out here. But have you ever thought about yourself like that? That these are the different things you do. And, it requires a lot of courage. It requires a lot of good health. It requires a lot of mental ability on your part to be able to do all of these things. And then if we keep doing these things without taking care of our own selves, then these roles suffer. And our relationships with people suffer, and our health suffers. So we will see how that works. Okay. Just give me 1 minute. Okay, yes. So are you overloaded? Yes. And then there are other factors also that contribute to your stress, right? There might be a pressure. You might have a pressure on your own self to be good at everything. Or you might be subject to comparison with others, or you might subject yourself to comparison with others, or there might be some self-induced guilt. And then there's lack of cooperation from stakeholders, either at work or your husband. Like you keep talking to your children that this is the place where you put the whites and this is the place where you put the colors, but then they don't follow that. So you don't get that cooperation. You don't get that cooperation in a different lot of places, and then that can create stress too. And then there are communication issues, right? We try to communicate something, people understand something else. You try to be, you say you're making a request, people see that as a threat. And that happens at work, that happens at home, that happens in relationships everywhere. And then there is a lack of a support system, or sometimes there's just no time to access a support system, right? And then there are health issues, there are calamities. There are so many things that, add up. And there's so much we all deal with. It's too much, but is this natural? Is this how our parents lived? Is this how the previous generations lived? Is this natural for us? Probably not. And what does this do to you, right? There are a lot of diseases now that are caused because of stress, but people don't know about it. And also, when you go for checkup for those diseases, like when you're trying to figure out why, what's wrong with you, all your medical test reports will be perfect, but you will still have that issue, and nobody will be able to explain it to you why. These are some of them: hair loss, fibromyalgia, constant body aches, poor digestion, common stress-related stomach troubles like cramps, bloating, heartburn, irritable bowel syndrome, weight loss, weight gain, skin reactions. There are skin reactions, and then there are sleep problems, there's concentration difficulty, heart disease, lowered immune response, low energy, difficulty swallowing sometimes. I had a friend who had great difficulty swallowing her food. And she went through many different tests, And then one time they had to put a camera probe inside of her to figure out what was going wrong. And everything was normal, actually, according to whatever medical science could measure. But medical science does not have a measurement of the amount of stress, and they don't have enough knowledge yet. They know stress does something, but they don't have enough knowledge on what are the different things that can happen because of stress. So, you know, stress caused her swallowing process to get disturbed. And she refused to change her lifestyle. She said, no, it's not because of stress. Everyone is going through this. Why? You know, I don't believe this is because of stress. Well, everyone's body reacts to stress in a different way. And then there is depression, there's anger, aggression, low tolerance, poor judgment, racing thoughts, forgetfulness, disorganization, procrastination, emotional problems, menstrual problems. Yeah? A lot of us know that, right? Like if we are emotionally affected, it affects our cycles. And when our cycles get, we're already stressed, and then that affects our cycle. And then when our cycle gets affected, we get more stressed, and it affects our cycle more. So the idea is that this whole thing about doing more and not having compassion for your own self can lead to a lot of issues, you know? And then some people have an irritable colon and many psychosomatic disorders, right? But this is not natural, and you got to do something. So all the time, you know, this, and things don't seem right, things used to get irritable and all of that. And then, you know, you feel your lives are not normal. Or rather, you feel your lives are normal and you're not feeling stressed, because that is the normal way to go, right? You're always doing 100,000 things and you think that's normal. You know, what is new in my life that has caused stress? No, this is a buildup over time. And I know two people I know, they had a lot of back issues because of, you know, their particular stress levels and the amount of work they did in a day. And to fix those back issues, they again did not change their lifestyle. They went and got some back surgery to tie up some muscles and, you know, so that they could be normal again. But I don't remember previous generation people getting all of these things done. They had recreation and everything built into their daily lifestyle. They were not working like us continuously. Even if they were working like us continuously, they had different ways in which they knew when to relax. And their sleep timings did not get disturbed just because of the amount of work they did. And also, we don't understand why all of this is, in spite of eating well, why all of this is happening to us. And then because we have these mood swings, our loved ones fail to understand our mood swings and they hold us accountable for them, right? What do they tell you? She's got issues. Something's wrong with her. Nobody says that, oh, maybe she's doing too much. You know, there is a reason because of, you know, how she's speaking or how she's behaving right now. Why is she getting so upset? People just get offended. Oh, she's getting upset. Nobody's going to try to be compassionate to you to say that, oh, maybe there are some reasons for that, right? And that is the way of the world. That's also how we treat other people, right? So there is some need for you to be compassionate to yourself, to recognize these things. And some of you may be in perfect health and everything may be perfect, but still it's nice to know all of this that happens. So it's very important to take care of yourself completely, very nicely. By self, in spiritual circles, we mean only spirit soul. But right now, we are spiritual beings having a human experience. We are entrapped in these bodies. We are covered by these bodies, and we identify with these bodies big time. So it's very important for us to also take care of the physical and the emotional health. And what should we take care of first? So we first take care of spiritual, you know, take care of our spiritual lives. And why do we do that? Because let's just understand one thing. I think we all know this, and I'm just saying stuff that you already know. I mean, I just feel sometimes that, do I even need to do this seminar? But I still feel, because to complete the sessions, we need to discuss some of these things. So why do we, you know, what happens is that you're, for your own complete wellness and wholeness, you need to have your body, mind, and soul need to be in balance, and they need to be taken care of nicely. Because if there is any imbalance in one aspect, it affects the other two. And I think you're, like, suppose you're sick, and you've been sick for a long time, like say you've been sick for a week, and you've been sick for 2 weeks, you know, you tend to lose your confidence if you're not able to walk, if you're not able to do your day-to-day routine and all. It affects your mental health, right? And then And that affects your spiritual health also, because if your body and mind is too disturbed, you're not able to chant and concentrate. And also sometimes your body is so tired, it becomes difficult to even focus on your spiritual life because you're so overwhelmed with what's happening to your body. And the same thing happens if your spiritual life is not good. It affects your mind and body. Like, there is this person, his name is Anton Boyzen, and he started this whole movement of CPE, which is called as Clinical Pastoral Education. And basically he said that the pastors need to understand, like people who are spiritually counseling others, need to understand the connection between the body, mind, and the soul, and the different feelings and everything that happen, and how people deal with that kind of stuff. And why did he create this whole system and course? That for now, for people to be a ordained minister, like in Christianity, they have to go through that course. Now, why did he do that? Because he was getting a lot of schizophrenic attacks. And every time he had a schizophrenic attack, he would go be admitted to the hospital. So he himself was a pastor, a Christian pastor. And after being admitted in the hospital like many, many times, he finally was, because he had spiritual knowledge, he was able to understand that all that was happening because he was identifying more with his body than focusing on his spiritual life. And also in his spiritual life, he was bringing material concepts of growth and achievement and perfection and all of those kind of pressures, which was causing his body to respond in that way. So then he started changing that perception of himself and changing all those kind of, he stopped pressurizing himself in the material way, even in his spiritual life. That's what we also do. And then he saw that his anxiety attacks and his schizophrenic attacks started reducing. There's another lady, her name is Louise Hayes, and she's written a book. I don't remember the name of the book, but if you Google her, you will get that name. And that book is a list of like all the different types of diseases that can happen to the body. And so we just spoke about the spirit connection to the mind, how it can affect the mind, your spiritual life. And then now we're talking about how the mental can affect the body, the physical, because she had a lot of diseases in her body. And she had very prone to infection, aches and pains, and she had cancer also. And then she went through various treatments, she went through the hospital and everything, but she wasn't able to like really get a good cure. But then she started learning how to listen to her own emotions and listen to her own body, and she was able to really cure herself in many ways. And then she wrote a book of the different types of diseases. So that whole book is basically just a list of diseases. And the list of diseases and why do those diseases happen? Like what kind of feelings that we have, negative feelings. I'll request whoever is on this conference call to please go on mute. I'm getting a little bit of disturbance. So she wrote a book on the different types of diseases and the different types of feelings that cause those diseases. Now, I don't remember the list, but she had things like if someone has painful periods, because I have that. So, you know, what is the cause of that? And now I don't remember what she wrote, but it was something to do with how I see myself or how I think about myself. And if someone has the, you know, this problem of whiteness in the body, like, you know, they get those white patches, then that also had to do with some kind of thought process. And she developed this institute and training center where she started healing people just by helping them change their thoughts and helping them develop a spiritual connection. And if you'll see how traditional medical systems work on you, whether it's Unani medicine or Ayurvedic medicine and everything, it's not that you meet the doctor and he'll just give you some dosage, right? Doesn't happen like that. Usually Ayurvedic doctor appointments last for a very long time. And they see you as a whole person. They see how you respond, what your emotions are, how you respond to different situations, what's your nature. And, you know, and then they are able to tell you a correlation between your nature and, you know, what's happening in your body. So the way you think and the way you feel affects the vat, pitta and kaph balance in your body. And then that further affects how you respond to stress. So I know one person who had a vata imbalance, like an air imbalance in their body, and because of which they were having a lot of mental, you know, it affects your mind. And so the mind because they had they'd gone through a lot of stress, it affected their body, so there was vata imbalance, and then more vata imbalance causes more issues of the mind. And what happened is that because they didn't have enough kapha in the body, the kapha is something that stabilizes you, vata is something that disturbs you, then they were not able to come out of that vicious cycle of mind causing vata imbalance and vata imbalance causing further imbalance of the mind. Because the effect of tolerance, kapha that gives you tolerance, was not there. And then the doctor gave medicines on increasing the kapha levels in the body, because of which some tolerance developed, because of which mental mind started calming down a little bit, because of which vata imbalances went, and then the person was healed completely. So just trying to tell you how there is a big connection between the body, mind and spirit. And a lot of times nowadays, even modern science is telling you how a lot of cancers are caused because of a lot of things that are happening to us in our mind. So it's very important that we see that connection and we learn how to take care of ourselves, right? And I think there are more examples here, but I need to go further on the slides. Okay, why is this not moving? Okay, so the way we understand, so one thing is we understand there is a connection between the three, and we need to take care of all three, but we take care of all three with a spiritual basis. So we balance and regulate the physical and the emotional with a spiritual basis, with a spiritual viewpoint. And then even Krishna is saying that to Arjuna, that he who is regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation and work can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. So the reason we take care of our eating, sleeping, recreation and working is so that we can be regulated and so that we can make spiritual advancement. But the focus that you see around the world right now is just, okay, just take care of your mind and your body, then you're good. No, the reason we take care of the mind and the body is so that we can make spiritual advancement and so that we can do our spiritual duties and our devotional service, right? At the beginning of the seminar in session one itself, we talked about, hey, we're talking about homemaking, but it's not to just have a beautiful home. The idea of talking about homemaking is how do we do that so that it can help and enhance our spiritual life? So we have that focus, right? So what is at the core of all those multiple roles that we play? Who are you? Right? The question to ask yourself, who am I? Am I a mother, or am I a wife, or am I a professional, or am I a social person, or am I a this, or am I a that? And you know, I have so many roles and it's so confusing. But who are you really? Right? Who are you? That's a very, very important thing. And we'll start from that. All of you on this call are aware, but just to bring some light to this, like we'll be again talking about this, just bring some light on it through this self-care point of view. So our real identity is that we are eternal servants of Krishna, right? We are always Krishna's das. So the test of any decision we make in our life and whatever step we take is basically, will this please Krishna or not? Right? So whatever role you're performing at work or at home, or how you're prioritizing your time, like you have a lot of tasks going on, as we saw in that slide. Now, what basis are you going to prioritize? Right? How is it going to benefit us in our spiritual lives? Right? That is, and what is of benefit in our spiritual lives? Something that is pleasing to Krishna and pleasing to Krishna's devotees. Right? Of course, we balance it out with what we can do, what is possible for us. Like, you know, Hanuman could throw big rocks and the squirrel could throw small ones, but they were still doing the same thing. They were still serving Krishna. So, of course, our capacities will differ, but it's very important to even think about self-care. It needs to be from a spiritual standpoint, or we'll again end up in a lot of relationship issues and with a lot of needs, right? So when you have a spiritual basis, it helps you calibrate your priorities and you can go further in your spiritual path by properly taking care of your physical and emotional health. And how does spiritual health impact your body and mind? A very nice verse from the Bhagavad Gita, and the following slide will be a quote from Srila Prabhupada. And in the 18th chapter, Krishna says, one who is transcendentally situated, means who is situated in good spiritual health, in good spiritual understanding, at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes joyful. So it automatically impacts your emotional health. He never laments or desires to have anything. You're out of mode of passion and ignorance, right? Emotional health is good. Most of the time we are disturbed because we get something or we don't get something. And he is equally disposed to every living being. It solves all your relationship problems. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. So if you are spiritually situated, it has a very good effect on your body and a very good effect on your mind. And Prabhupada says, as an explanation to that verse, he says, if you accept Bhagavad Bhakti Yoga, devotional service to the Lord, you shall be prasanna manasa. You shall be always feeling jolly. Right? You're always happy. You see, devotees who are very nicely situated, they're always happy, always enthusiastic, always thinking about what to do next, what service to do next. If I'm not jolly, if I'm not prasanna manasa, that means Maya has attacked me. A Bhagavad Bhakta shall never be a prasanna, not joyful. Always joyful. If he is actually in contact with Krishna, how he can become morose? No, if he is morose, if he is unhappy, that means Maya has attacked him. This is the test. So, if you are in contact with Krishna, you will always be happy. And if you are acting from your real identity, that I am spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna, servant of Krishna, you will always be happy. But if you are not happy, then you know that, you know, we are not acting from that platform. Now, it is hard for us to act from that platform. So, but I think we've established the fact that it's very important to situate yourself properly spiritually so that you feel, because it affects your mental and your physical health also. So then there are some activities that need to be done so that you maintain good spiritual health, and you need to find time for that. You have to prioritize this. Like, you know, when you're trying to fill, if someone gives you a lot of rocks and someone gives you a lot of sand and you got to fill everything into a jar, if you put the sand in first, there won't be any place for the rocks. But if you put the rocks in first, there is a chance that the sand will find its way through all the different gaps between the rocks, right? So similarly, your spiritual life is your big rock. You want to focus on your spiritual life nicely. I'm not saying you focus on your spiritual life while neglecting your sleep and your eating times and all of those things. But once you've taken care of the basics of your physical health, you want to focus on your spiritual life. And you can do that by, there are five potent forms by which you can revive your Krishna consciousness and be in a good spiritual health. There's going to holy places of his pastimes, basically visiting dhams. Now, we can't do that every day, but the temple is Vrindavan because of the devotion of all the devotees over there. The deities are present. You know, visiting the temple every day, hearing about the Lord, hearing different lectures, chanting Hare Krishna, connecting with the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, not mechanically, but with prayer. Krishna, please accept me in your service. Please help me connect with you. You know, trying to revive your connection like that, worshipping the Lord's deity form. Whatever service you do in the temple, there's worship of Sri Sri Radha Neela Madhav and all the deities. And being connected with a loving network of devotees. So that keeps you in good spiritual health. And most of you are doing that. And then you learn how to love, you know, Krishna and the devotees. So doing some of these things keeps you in good spiritual health. Now, some things for you to think about, and I'll appreciate if you all can put something in the chat window. You know, something for you to think about, these four questions. What do you do on a daily basis to maintain good consciousness? And what is the negative impact of you not taking care of your spiritual being, well-being? If you are not in good spiritual consciousness, it impacts the consciousness of your spouse and your children and everyone around you. So what commitment would you like to make towards your spiritual health going forward, right? So what can you do on a daily basis to maintain good consciousness? What do you do so that your consciousness is good during the day? And how much effort are you putting into that? If you don't take care of your spiritual well-being, how does that impact you? And then the next question is, how does it impact the others around you? And then the question after that is, what commitment would you like to make towards your spiritual health going forward? So this is a question I would like to ask everyone. I'm putting it in the chat window. So what commitment are you going to make for your spiritual health going forward? You know, I request you all to share so that it inspires us. I can share for myself. For myself, attentive chanting in the morning with devotees. I want to make that commitment to myself in front of all of you, because that is the single most thing, important thing that I need to do. I think I'm doing still okay. Those other things are attractive to me and I know I will do it. But this chanting is a little hard for me. So I want to push myself and I want to commit because I know that's good for my health. Important. So what would you all like to do? You know, we'll go to the next slide only after we've heard from a few of you on this particular point. Yes, Hare Krishna. Anyone has any points? Okay, Monica has a nice point. She wants to increase her chanting from 4 rounds to 8 rounds. So Monica is a nice devotee lady, does a lot of service. She's from Bellevue and she's making this commitment to increase her chanting. What about the others? Please share.
Hare Krishna Mataji.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
I would like to do more reading in the afternoons. Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, very nice. So Malvika is on the conference call and she says she wants to do more reading in the afternoon. And Abhilasha wants to increase her chanting quantity as well as quality. And also wants to listen to more of lectures, because this is something that is going to keep you in spiritual consciousness all the time, right? You're chanting and you're hearing. And if you're in spiritual consciousness all the time, you're going to act from that platform. So Geetika is going to wake up early and complete chanting early in the morning before she's busy taking care of her husband and kids and all the household stuff. Abhilasha is saying that she doesn't want to be messed up and lose the focus and goal of connecting with Krishna, because she sees that as important. I'm guessing she sees that as important towards her service towards her family and how she influences their consciousness. And Divya is going to hear Bhagavatam in audio form. So see, some of these things we have to do. And we don't do this. Like, my husband gave me a very interesting point. He was recently presenting on recreation, the importance of recreation, on Friday, last Friday. And he helped me change my perspective on chanting. For me, chanting is like, oh, okay, I have to do it because I don't do it well. So, you know, it becomes a burden for me. And then because I don't do it well, it seems like a very long thing for me to do. But he said, no, think about your chanting time as your recreation. See it as recreation. See it as, wow, I'm getting a chance to connect with Krishna and be with Krishna. Don't take it as a pressure on yourself that I have to do it. Right? You do it from a place of self-care and self-compassion. But this is needed for me. I'm doing this for myself. And then gradually, as we do it properly, we will do it nicely for Krishna also. Or whatever works for you. So thank you all for sharing. You know, like, some of these things for you to consider, and you all can meditate more deeply on these questions. Like, if you are in good spiritual consciousness, it impacts the consciousness of your spouse and your children and other family members, right? There's a very big correlation to that. There is this saying, right? If mama ain't happy, nobody happy. So if mama's not happy in the house, nobody can be happy in the house. Nobody feels happy. They're all very scared and upset, even the husband. All right? So we'll go to the next one. Sorry. I'm not sure what's going on. Yeah, just a minute. So we go to the next slide, which is emotional self-care. So taking care of yourself from an emotional standpoint, right? It's very important. So as a spirit soul, the only need we really have is basically, the soul's only need is to serve Krishna with love, right? That's the only need of the soul. But because we are covered with this body and we identify with this body, there are other needs that come, like this need for there are, and there are seven basic needs that I think I keep talking about it, like that's something that Maslow has identified, and these needs also correlate with our five koshas, Annamaya, Pranamaya, Manamaya, Vijnanamaya, Jnanamaya, Anandamaya, like that. And then there are these, it correlates with that, but just to keep it simple, I have put it here in a simple form. So we have this need for autonomy, like basically we want to have choice, freedom, and space. Then we have a need for play, basically to have fun, laughter, therapeutic stuff. Need for celebration, right? We have interdependence. We have a need for loving relationships, love, appreciation, and friendship. And we have a need of integrity, to be authentic to our purpose in life, you know, be able to share our vulnerabilities and feelings with others. And spirituality, reestablish our connection with Lord, peaceful mode of goodness. And physical needs like sleeping, eating, protection, defense, you know, those things. And if you see that the entire Varnashram system of the four Varnas and the four Ashrams is designed in such a way that these needs are naturally taken care of for the people, and then they're able to make spiritual advancement. So even Krishna is very compassionate. He realizes that we are spirit souls having a material experience, human experience. And, you know, it's important to know where you are at with these needs. A lot of times what happens for devotees is that we hear philosophy and then we start thinking that we're supposed to operate completely from the spiritual platform. And we don't realize that these needs are still there, and then they keep interfering in our spiritual advancement because we don't find a spiritual way to manage them, and we keep denying ourselves. And the more we do that, the more frustrated and angry and depressed at everything we get, right? So then we don't feel joyful, you know. We say that, oh, I was cheated. Prabhupada said chant and be happy, but I'm like, chant and be stressed. I don't know what's going on. No, because we have to have the humility to accept where we are at in our spiritual lives. And I'm not saying that you make these needs and you just remain, make this as like a parking place and you stay there. No, but it's important to acknowledge that. Now, when any of these needs are not satisfied, then whatever you feel basically, or you act, or you desire, it's all based on whether your needs are satisfied or not. And the more you identify with the body, the less spiritual you are, the stronger these needs are. And the more you are spiritually elevated and advanced, the lesser you have these needs. You operate more out of the only need, which is service to Krishna, right? So that's why I'm saying, again, if you take care of the spiritual part, automatically these emotional things also go away. We already talked about it. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma. Now we'll see how. So usually what happens is everyone is trying to satisfy some need or the other, right? There is a need. And we tend to judge ourselves or others like, oh, why are they doing this? You know, basically what is, the need is not wrong. The need is there, it's natural. What is usually good or bad is the strategy we use to satisfy that need. Like I was attending a lecture in Mayapur 2 years ago. Bir Krishna Maharaj, he was doing this seminar on these seven basic needs. And he was mentioning that, like, say, like someone in the audience said that, oh, even sex is a basic need. Why haven't you put it over there? And then he said, sex is not a basic need, right? If you go back to the slide, sex is basically the need for, basically, sex is just a strategy that we use to satisfy our need for intimacy and loving relationships. So the you know, that is like those kind of the expressions, like, you know, through sexual stuff is basically is a satisfaction, a strategy to satisfy your need. Similar, so like that, there are many things. Like this, Hiranyakashipu had a certain need, but the way he dealt with it, the strategies he used to employ it was not right. Like, you see a lot of people who are, a lot of times when people are, you know, some people who are always angry, always upset, or acting in weird ways to attract attention and things like that, they're probably needing love. And they think that the way to get love is by getting attention. But, you know, so they don't use good strategies to get that need satisfied. And, but if we are intelligent, we will be able to see which need is causing them to behave in a certain way. And for ourselves also, so since this is a seminar on self-care, we want to talk about being aware of your own needs and then the strategies you use to meet those needs. And because we are spiritual people, we need to find spiritual ways to take care of those needs and then manage those needs and then gradually overcome those needs. But it's not going to happen in one day of hearing a lecture. It takes time, right? And this kind of understanding of your own self goes a long way in actually detaching yourself from those needs also. So one thing is, feelings come because of satisfied or unsatisfied needs. What we do is we try to suppress the feeling. We don't try to go down to what need it is bringing you to, right? So if you deny your feelings, you don't accept, acknowledge, deal with your feelings, then they'll make you sick by if they go inside, if you're a quiet person. Or if they come outside, then you're going to be an aggressive person, right? Both are not healthy for you. So it's important to practice some self-empathy, some self-awareness, and we will see that how. Usually what happens is when you're suppressing feelings and needs, you find a zillion ways to escape those feelings, right? Some people find an escape through food because it gives you similar satisfaction. Or some people have millions of friends on Facebook, but they actually need only one. Or some people are constantly on gadgets. Or some people are into addiction. Or some people are trying to get attention, right? Either through their dressing or the way they talk or their behavior or by doing... some people try to satisfy their need for love and intimacy by constantly achieving because they think that that's love is, you know, there's a shortage of love and the only way to get it is to by being a big achiever and only achievers get love. Like that. Right? So we find many ways to escape those feelings. We find many strategies to meet those needs. And they're not necessarily spiritual. So you want to cultivate some kind of awareness for that. And for that, you need to have some kind of self-compassion. We use some of these slides in the Dealing with Loneliness session that we did recently. So we just picked a few of them, like three of them from there. So we were talking about the example of loneliness. Now, usually when people feel lonely, they're very upset and very mad. And if you are in a family, then you're very mad at the people because you feel they're not spending enough time with you or they're not doing something. And I'm sure there must be some kind of neglect. Or there's no friend available or there are no, you know, your friends are not there for you or whatever. There's no sense of community and things like that. So usually a lot of anger comes out on those people that they're not doing something or on the situations. But we don't spend time connecting with ourselves. See, it's like when you're feeling something, if you're in a car accident and, you know, you find yourself bleeding, would you like it, and if you and your husband were in the car or you and your friend were in the car, would you like it that the other person who was in the car with you and they're not injured but you're injured, would you like it if they run after the car that hit you and try to get them caught? Or would you like it if they care for you in that moment and they forget about taking revenge or getting upset on the other person? You would want them to take care of you. You're bleeding, you're hurting, something's paining. You want them to take care of you. But what happens is this is how we usually treat ourselves. When we are in a situation, and say if you're in an altercation with someone, or say you're feeling lonely in this case, right? You made a plan, something, and it didn't work out, or you're husband decided to go somewhere, or your friend, your roommate decided to go somewhere, or your children decided to not be with you, or whatever, and you're feeling lonely. Usually what we do is we run after the car that could have caused the accident, right? So we start getting upset on them, start doing, you know, getting upset, arguing, and all of those things. But what you really need to do is to take care of yourself, connect with yourself, and find out what's going on inside of you. And I don't think a lot of us take care of ourselves like that, right? So instead of going to the next level of reaction, which is anger, you want to see what need of mine is not getting satisfied. Okay, I need to be with people. I have this need for interconnectedness. And I'm feeling really lonely right now. Right? Acknowledge it. And I'm feeling so unloved and so sad and so depressed and lost. And I just don't like feeling like this. Right? Usually we don't like feeling like this. But everything goes so fast in our heads that we immediately get angry on the other person. But if we study Bhagavad Gita 2, second chapter, 58th verse to 62 verse, about how if some need is not getting satisfied, it gets transferred to, person becomes angry, right? So the same thing we're talking about here. And this is something, this is how psychology deals with it. And then you can say, it is really hard for me to go through these feelings, and I feel very sad for myself, right? You feel sad for yourself when you're in a car accident. You're not angry at the other person at that time. But we don't realize that we're in car accidents almost every single day during, and many days, many times during a single day. It's just because we don't see the blood oozing out. We don't realize how injured and how hurt and, you know, how much what else we're feeling, right? So you can then say that you want to heal it, right? If your friend is feeling lonely, what are you going to tell them? Oh, I see it's really hard for you. And, you know, I feel very sorry that you are going through this. You say that to yourself. And then once you've acknowledged it, felt it, healed it, then you can do something about it. But if you don't do the first three, the only thing you do is get angry on the other person, right? So here we took this example of loneliness, but you can take that example for a lot of things. And you will see how whatever feelings you have are connected to certain satisfied or unsatisfied needs. Now, if you are able to go through this exercise, this is something that even the book of Nonviolent Communication talks about. This is what a lot of psychotherapists talk about with respect to emotional regulation. And this is there in the Bhagavad Gita, 258 to 262. It is basically thinking, feeling, and then willing, right? You're thinking something, you're lonely, you're feeling lonely, and then you do something about it, right? Now, but if you have paused and if you have gone through this exercise, you will find some ways to do something, take care of yourself so that you don't feel lonely again. But if you don't do it like this, thinking, feeling, and willing is still happening, but you're not connected to yourself. You're putting the onus of your feelings on the other person like that. Now, once you are able to acknowledge it, feel it, heal it, you're able to release it, that is a place where you try to find positive solutions to for your situation, because you're really feeling sad for yourself and you don't want to go through those feelings again, right? So you own your feeling and you do something about it. Now, because you're spiritual people, you want to find spiritual solutions to manage those needs, right? Before, when you were feeling lonely, you dealt with it in a certain way. Now, if you feel lonely, you deal with it in a certain way. Before, when you were feeling sad or unloved, or you were feeling like if your child didn't do well in school, you felt about it, you reacted to it in a certain way. But when you go through this exercise, you find a different way to deal with it because you have some more self-awareness now. So you find spiritual strategies to deal with those needs like that. And if anyone needs more resources, I can point you out to more resources. We also made videos on these things, like when we first started making videos for YouTube. So if you go to this particular YouTube channel, Bhakti Woman, through which you're hearing, there are three videos on take charge of your emotions. They're not like very nicely done because that's when we were just starting out. But it just talks about these things in a little funny way also. So please go through that. Now, when you learn how to express your feelings, then you discover where they're coming from. Same thing we talked about, right? You discover which need of yours is not getting satisfied. There's a whole list of feeling words on the website cnbc.org, the Center for Nonviolent Communication, that you can access, right? You will know that sometimes if you're angry or something repeatedly, then you know that you don't like feeling being, if you've been betrayed, you get angry. But then if you go through this exercise, you will realize that, oh, you really don't like feeling betrayed. You don't want to be betrayed. And then you have a better solution to that. You don't keep going and arguing with that person who's betraying you. You just learn how to avoid that person. And then also, there's some patterns of relationships, or there's sadness related to loneliness, or your expectations of people. Anyway, this slide was for that loneliness seminar. So stuff that is over here is related to loneliness. But again, below your feelings, you will discover these seven different needs. And then you will discover subtopics within those seven different needs, right? So it's a lot of self-awareness that comes in, and a lot of self-pacification and compassion that can happen, and a lot of spiritual strategies to manage those needs. So another beautiful thing happens when you have the self-empathy and observation and access to your own feelings and how they're connected to your needs, then you learn how to make requests to other people. Then you don't come with this place of anger. Hey, you didn't do this for me and that's how I'm feeling like this. No, you learn how to make a request. You know, I feel really lonely and I just don't like feeling lonely. And could you really spend some time with me? You know, I really need to be with someone right now. Is it possible? Or if not possible right now, can you make it possible sometime? So usually if you make a request like that, And you really mean it from a very humble and a very vulnerable way, where you're owning your feelings and you're really making a request to the other person. More often than not, they will respond to your need. But if you go with anger, you never do this, you are like this, and all, they're going to escape from you. They don't know how to respond to that, right? So once you have this understanding for your own self, you also develop empathy for others. You understand they also have their needs. They also have feelings, right? This is which platform? So anamaya is just about yourself. Then anamaya, pranamaya. Pranamaya is you realize, oh, other people also have life. They also have needs. So your understanding of other people and how they behave and why they behave like that also changes. And then if you see them reacting in certain ways, you realize they're trying to satisfy some need. Right? And the needs are not wrong. It's one of those seven things. Only the strategies are, you know, sometimes people feel helpless, they may resort to weird strategies. So when you understand others also have something like that, then you are able to help them, encourage them, and help them find strategies. And then you also, your overall conversation with people changes because you learn how to respect their needs in whatever you're saying also. So it really helps in a lot of emotional regulation for your own self and then in your relationships with others. And then how do you make those requests? You know, your needs are your responsibility, so you can make requests. Would you be willing to help me with this? And you don't use people to fulfill your needs. Usually what happens is we're not aware, so we keep using, we think it's our birthright. We think, you know, just because they are our certain relative or certain, you know, connection with this body that we have, they're supposed to behave with us in a certain way. All this is bodily identification, right? But once you connect with yourself, you realize that, you know, people are not meant to serve you and your feelings. You're responsible for your needs and feelings, and you can only make requests to people. And then you'll learn how to interact with people in a causeless way also. That it's not that I do this for you and you do this for me. Let's satisfy each other's needs, right? Usually relationships are based on sense gratification, but when you come to this awareness, your relationships come more in a causeless way. Okay, I'm responsible for my needs and things, and I can take care of myself, and I can make requests when I have to. So I'm not going to use people for myself, right? And that's a big step forward in learning how to serve others. And how people behave is up to them, what they want to do. So you can make a request and people may not respond. But anyway, you couldn't have controlled them by screaming either. And also, we learn how to be mature. When we have so much awareness of our needs, we realize how these needs disturb our focus, disturb our spiritual lives. It makes our intelligence many-branched. But we want our intelligence to be single-branched. So we learn that, okay, to keep my body and mind and soul together, I need to have these needs. I need to take care of these needs. I need to have these defenses. I need to have these boundaries. But I will only do that as much as required to practice my spiritual life. Because if you control yourself too much, then it's not good for you. Like, I think I mentioned that already in the course of this presentation over the last 9 weeks. But just say it again. Like when in the 11th canto, Uddhava is talking about mind control, just like Arjuna talks about that, right? And then Arjuna says, hey, this is very difficult to control the mind. I can control the wind, but I can't control the mind. And Uddhava also says that, man, you're talking about, Krishna, you're talking about, you know, that how we should be tolerant even if someone spits on us, urinates on our food, or does so many of these things. It's not possible. I find this very difficult. And Krishna is so compassionate. And he tells him that, yes, I agree with you. This is hard. Very, you know, with a lot of empathy, he says that. And then he gives him a tip. Of course, the whole chapter is an example of the Avanti Brahman and his song and how he's at that platform. But Krishna also gives Arjuna a tip. He says that your mind is like an untamed horse. So when you have a new horse come to you and you've got to tame it, an expert horseman does not just pull all the reins and tries to control the horse from day one. Right? It first observes the mind. So it first observes the horse. Like it sits on the horse and then it takes it for a ride. And then it tries to understand, you know, how does the horse like to ride? Does it like to ride very fast? Does it like to ride slow? Does the horse like to ride straight? How does the horse deal with, you know, potholes? How does the horse deal with flat land? How does the horse deal with, you know, undulating ground? How does the horse deal with grass? How does the horse deal with speed breakers and things like that, right? And then it gradually controls the horse's reins. But then it does not keep the horse's reins in control all the time. It allows the horse to have its own trot or gallop or, you know, passionate running, and then sometimes it causes the horse, it controls the horse to also follow the horseman. And then gradually, by allowing the horse a little bit, and then controlling the horse a little bit, and then allowing and controlling, the horse starts coming more and more in control of the horseman, and then the horseman still knows how the horse likes to run, and the horseman takes care of the horse's needs to go. But finally, by doing that, and gradually, you know, pulling and, you know, doing all of that, the horse comes in control. Similarly, the mind will come in control. So you can't just give up everything, but at the same time, you can't allow yourself everything. So you find spiritual strategies to deal with your needs, and it takes care of your emotional regulation. And do what you can and try this exercise. It's really helpful. And as you situate yourself more and more spiritually, these needs will reduce on their own. So don't worry about it. As long as your needs are being satisfied within the realm of Krishna consciousness, you're not breaking the four regulative principles, you're okay to begin with. But does not mean you stay there. You know, there's a next level and a next level and a next level. But if you follow your spiritual life nicely, you will automatically grow, right? And Krishna consciousness takes care of a lot of our needs. Like a lot of these seven basic needs. Like if I just go back to the slide, this whole system that Srila Prabhupada has created, you know, you have your need of autonomy taken care of, your autonomous at home, and then also certain services that you do, you have some level of autonomy. There's a place for play, yeah, dancing in kirtan, dealing with devotees, celebration all the time, interdependence, the need for loving relationships. There's such a nice, wonderful, loving network of devotees. Integrity to be authentic to our purpose in life, absolutely, right? Krishna consciousness gives you a place to be authentic to your spiritual purpose of going back to God and Krishna in this lifetime. Spirituality, of course. Physical, yes, you got to take care of it. And devotees take care of each other, like that. So if you do the spiritual, it automatically takes care of your emotional and physical and all those needs also. So now regarding emotional self-care, that you know, just to bring some awareness around that, right? What are the two things that cause you to be emotionally disturbed? And then are you even aware? What are the different signs in your body happen that tell you that you are disturbed right now? Do you have that awareness of your own self? Do you have that awareness? And then what are your strategies? So once you learn this about yourself, then what are the different things that you do to emotionally distress? So once you have that awareness about yourself that, hey, I am, these things cause me to be disturbed, and these are the different signs that my body tells me when I'm disturbed, then what do you do for yourself emotionally to de-stress? Because you got to take some immediate measures also, right? And if you are in a happy state of mind, it affects the happiness of your spouse and your children. How do you feel about that? And we already talked about that. So what commitment would you take up to de-stress on a daily basis, and try to find some Krishna conscious ways to do that, right? Because in your lifestyle, spiritual self-care, emotional self-care, physical self-care must be built on a day-to-day basis. It's not that, okay, I burn out and then I figure out ways to take care of myself. No, we should avoid burnout. Burnout is not natural. You know, this whole civilization has become is like work hard and party harder, and then, you know, you're really stressed after that. But if you built in proper systems in your daily routine of your spiritual self-care, emotional self-care, then, you know, that's, you're learning how to de-stress on a daily basis. So what is your commitment? Request people to share on de-stressing on a daily basis. Yes, people on the conference call, the YouTube has a little bit lag, so by the time they get this message, people on the conference call want to tell me Krishna conscious ways in which, or whatever ways in which you can learn how to de-stress on a daily basis. Taking breaks, taking care of yourself, you know, there are some nice teas available. There's nice soothing kirtans that you can hear. There are some arts that you can do in Krishna consciousness. I like to do art. I don't do a whole lot of it, but I like to do that. It just takes my mind away from a lot of things. And I feel happy also, and it soothes me in many ways. There are candles to soothe you. There are aromas to soothe you. There's good prasad to soothe you. There's so many things. And so request to people to share what would they do on a daily basis. In the interest of time, I'll need to go to the next slide. Okay. And then there is physical self-care. So again, how does good health affect your mood and outlook towards life? What is the relationship between good health and spiritual life? Basically, good health and your sadhana and your devotional service. See, sometimes when you're not healthy, I remember when I'm not feeling too well, like if I haven't slept too well, and when Harivilas Prabhu tells all of us to go on Sankirtan, I really don't want to go because I'm so tired already. And then I think, oh, I'll go there and I'll feel more tired. But on the other hand, if my health is in good condition, which usually it is, and if I've slept well, then I'm enthusiastic about service, right? Or we lose confidence, oh, I'll be tired again, and then I'll feel like this, and I'll feel like that, right? And then if your health is not good, of course it impacts your spouse and children and your ability to take care of them. And it impacts you at work also. And what commitment would you like to make towards taking care of your body? Anyway, we'll get to these questions again. So we have Geetika tell us that she likes to have prasad. Okay, I think I'll keep reading your comments and then I'll collect all of them towards the end. So there are different things that you can do for physical self-care. Eating well, you know, being in community. Now, you may say, oh, community is not about your own body. But yes, being in community soothes your mind, soothes your body. Relationships, having a regulated life, eating at the same time, sleeping at the same time. You know, then automatically your bowel movements and your digestion and everything works really well. Getting some sunshine, which is rare in Seattle. But too, when it's sunny, try to go out in the sun. It makes you feel good. Go out for walks. Have some hobbies. Take showers. You know, showers not just clean your body, but they actually, you know, it's not like a new day for your body, but it's also a new day for your mind. It does something to your subtle body that, you know, removes all the stuff from the mind and it, you know, it refreshes you from the mental level also. And then there are different aromas. You learn how to connect with people. You volunteer, make friends, serve with people, patch up with difficult relationships, right? So I hear that Geetika has one thing that she wants to do is to de-stress on a daily basis. She likes to have nice prasad, which is good. And that's a very nice point. We discussed this in food mood also, where if you have nice prasad with different items, it satisfies your senses and it makes you feel good. And I think we were also discussing this in the loving parenting to protect your child from teen dating. And there, one of the ladies, she's a working lady, Padma Mataji. And she said she makes sure that she makes 3 meals a day and she makes sure that all those 3 meals are different because it affects the minds of their children, of our children. Right? So there are these different things that you do as a part of your physical self-care routine. And there are some other things that you do too, which you must share about. I just put the questions there for the physical also. So what commitment would you like to take to care for your body? You know, so there are these questions that are there. I'll share these questions with you and something y'all can fill up later also. It's a separate document already there on the website. So there are these different things you can do, right? So thank you very much for hearing. I don't have all the tips here, but I want to set the basis here for all of you that it's very important that you take care of yourself for your overall well-being so that you can advance spiritually. And your family can advance spiritually. There are not a lot of people here to care for you. So you got to take care of yourself. Very important. And it goes a long way in keeping your family sane, keeping you sane at the workplace, keeping you sane in your achievements, and keeping you sane in your spiritual journey. So there's another thing Geetika is saying here is she likes to go for walks, but it takes a backstage because of the weather. I am waiting for spring to come so that I can go back to my walks. I just, that refreshes me so much. Thank you for sharing that, Geetika. And, you know, you have seen this oxygen mask analogy in the plane. They usually tell you, you put your mask, your own mask first before you put the mask for your child or the person sitting next to you. And why do they say that? Because if you take care of yourself nicely, you can take care of others. So take care of yourself so you can take care of others. So taking care of yourself is not selfishness. It's actually coming from, if it it can come from a place of selflessness, where you're taking care of yourself so that you can take care of everyone else around you and their spiritual life, right? Something for all of you to do. I'll be very happy if you all can do that. And also, please share your commitment. I would like to go for walks. And do more arts and chanting. These are my commitments for these three different realms. What is your commitment? Something please share with all of us to make it interactive. Yes?
Mataji, I would like to exercise or do some kind of yoga or something which benefits and clears my mind and makes me happy.
Yes, wonderful. Yoga is nice because it helps you physically also and it helps you mentally also. Wonderful. Thank you for sharing and thank you for doing it. Yes, anyone else?
Yes.
I think we have a few more people on the conference call. Just wait a few more minutes. If there's nobody else here to share, then we will end this. And next week we have, if I get questions, then we can have the next session. If I don't get questions, then we will not have the next session. So based on all that we have heard so far, if there is any discussion you would like to have or any points you would like me to research and present or any points that I have missed or anything you would like to share, please let me know. And if there is enough interest, then we will have the call next week also. All right, doesn't look like people have much to share. So I'd like to end the YouTube here. Thank you very much. Very grateful to all of you for being with us through all these 10 different sessions. And self-care is also figuring out that I've heard these 9 sessions. Now I can't do all of it together. So let me find a piecemeal approach to do, to follow it, but also act from the platform where I am at. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.